Well, good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Thursday. It is a delight to be here, not only to be with you on what is just a gorgeous day, but also a day where we are doing a roundtable live panel from the Linda before a live studio audience. And listen to them. They've had fruit, yogurt, and pastry. They are ready to go. They are excited. And we are excited, too. I want to introduce, of course, first and foremost, the head of the round table, Dr. Alan Chartok, of course.
Cut it out, Joe. We all know who the head of the round table is.
Well, it's a round table. There is no head, but if there's going to be, it's going to be you. Daily Freeman, publisher emeritus, media project regular, and dear friend of WAMC, Ira Fussfeld is with us this morning.
If I have yogurt and muffins at my age, I have to go also.
we'll have a break in 45 minutes. Yeah. Also, the apple of our eye and the person that we love because she knows so damn much and studies and puts us all to shame, but we're delighted to have her with us. She is a communications consultant. Teresa Bourgeois is with us. Alan and Ira and Teresa are here to help me because our job is a little bit different than normal where we'll all be offering our opinion, but we really are here to hear from the man of the hour, the man that this audience paid to come and to see and to hear from, and that we all get to benefit this morning from his wisdom. And his experience, his incredible experience, he's a counterterrorism expert, he is a best-selling author, he is a commentator on MSNBC, I believe he lives in that studio, so the fact that we got him out for a few minutes to be with us is a great pleasure. We announced this event, I think, on a Tuesday, and by Wednesday the tickets were sold out. Will you please welcome Malcolm Nance to our program?
Eat more pastries. Get your money's worth.
Well, I'm telling you, it's, we do this panel every single solitary day, but it's a lot nicer when you have people cheering for you. Isn't it nice? Isn't that nice? It's pretty great. We're gonna talk and really put Malcolm to the, make him work this morning and ask him a lot of questions, and we'll be going out into the audience for your questions as well. Of course, the big issue today is, yes, there was the horrid shooting that happened in Alexandria, Virginia. We will talk about that. The congressman, Scalise, who was gravely injured, is in critical condition still. Those injuries seem to be worse than was first reported. It remains in critical condition, and so we will certainly address that and talk about that. The big story, of course, is the Washington Post report that came out yesterday saying that the special counsel, Bob Mueller, that part of this investigation is, yes, investigating the President of the United States for obstruction of justice. Well, you can tell we're before a public radio crowd, can't you? So, the question is, what do we all make of that, and how does this fit into the greater Russia probe? And, Malcolm, we will begin with you, sir. What do you make of, when you heard that story, I mean, there was a point where you're like, oh my God, that's a bombshell, and then you're like, oh, well, that probably would, like, that can't be too much of a surprise, can it?
No. My first thought was, wow, what would Alan Chartok think about this?
We'll find out in a moment.
Because that's going to be good. But my first thought was, the Post obviously did some deep dive reporting on this. And obstruction of justice at this point is just a matter of course. I heard this morning a commentator say, I think it was Joe Scarborough, who said, Donald Trump had an opportunity to have his lawyers take his Twitter phone away. And he didn't. And everything that he said can now be used against him. And one of the things was his Twitter storm from this morning, where he attacked the special counsel Mueller and the FBI and called it a witch hunt, right, in all capital letters. This is not going to help things. It's almost setting up this pathway to where, you know, these rumors that were floated recently about him wanting to, you know, get rid of the special counsel. I made a comment yesterday where I said it's almost as if he had read a book on Nixon and said, what are all the things Nixon wanted to do to get impeached?
So like a checklist?
He's like, check. And fire the FBI director, check. Get rid of the special. You know, all of these things are possible. But, you know, as amusing as they are this morning, and we need all the laughs we can get, this is horrible. And we're in a situation where the White House feels under siege, justifiably so. But the Washington Post and the New York Times, they are committing journalism every day now. And I almost fear 5:30 in the evening, because that's when these stories tend to break.
What do we know now as far as who Mueller wants to talk to? And because a lot of this, from my understanding and from my reading, both in the Post report as well as the Times report, is that, yes, a lot of this came immediately following the Comey testimony, but also just over the last few days as people started to talk about the leaks within the White House, from the White House, that there were talks amongst the president that he was going to fire Bob Mueller.
Right. You know, interesting component of that article was a person who they said they wanted to talk to. They want to speak to the Office of the Director of National Intelligence Director Coates. They want to speak to Admiral Rogers, Director of NSA. And they want to speak to the Deputy Director of the National Security Agency, which is an interesting thing. I used to work at NSA at one point in my career. And the deputy director is not a military person. It is always a career civilian. And one of the comments that was made this morning was, you know, Admiral Rogers had better pray to God that that person's recollection jives with his. Because this is a person who has 20, 30 years in NSA and as a civilian and can go no further in their career. And is not going to want to sacrifice that for, you know, Admiral Rogers was also offered the National Security Advisor post at one point when they were just after the election. That was a very surprising person to bring in there, because now you have a career bureaucrat who solely will work for the interest of the National Security Agency and was not offered the job of National Security Advisor. So they will probably, that person, I can't even recall the name of the person, but that person will probably be far more honest about their recollections of what was said from the White House, if anything came from the White House.
But he had notes, right?
Because
he took notes of a phone call that Rogers had, right?
That's correct.
And yet, first of all, I am absolutely of the opinion that, like Nixon, Mueller is going to get fired. And there is no way out for him not to be fired, because he's closing in. Now, the other interesting thing I read was about Rosenstein, because apparently he has to step aside too, because now he's a material witness to what has happened.
Yeah.
And then who takes over with the right to fire Mueller?
Right. We said this morning that it would be the chief of custodial services at the Department of Justice that will be left over, who will actually have to do the investigation.
Well, this is what I don't get, because you're absolutely right. I mean, didn't we figure this out at some point in our nation's history, that eventually somebody was going to have to oversee the overseers?
Well, let me ask Malcolm this. When Comey was still in office, he confirmed what Trump said he told him, which was that Trump was not under investigation while Comey was there.
Yeah, counterintelligence investigation at that time.
Okay, so then Comey gets fired, and then we find that Mueller is investigating him for obstruction of justice. Do you think it's the mere act of him firing Comey that is sparking it, or are you, your analysis that there's something else that Mueller is seeing?
The FBI investigation, I like to clarify these things when I'm in a public event. First off, the initial FBI investigation, a counter-espionage investigation. That's what counterintelligence means. They were hunting for the Americans who were in communication with Russian intelligence officers. That when it's not a normal FBI investigation. These aren't regular old FBI guys. These are guys who are loyalty is to the nation, not to the Bureau, the FBI's National Counterintelligence Division. Now, that being said, there is now, with the special counsel coming on board, I mean, everything Comey was doing was going to happen anyway. Now it's really going to happen. But it's not just the spy hunt. That's still on. You have, he brought in the head of the Financial Crimes Division from the Department of Treasury, a guy whose job it is to root out money laundering. Just hiring that person tells you where the investigation is going. Because we need to know, did he get money from Moscow that made a lot of these decisions possible? Well, that's two tracks of the investigation. Now we have obstruction of justice. That's a third track of the investigation. We have how many more tracks can we go? I'm sure there are many, many other things, because as we learned with the Benghazi hearing, you can start off investigating one thing and end up with, you know, a server in your basement. So this investigation is going to be a how can I put it? It's going to literally be a tornado that tears through the Trump campaign.
You mentioned Benghazi, though. I mean, nothing substantial came out of those out of that investigation. Do you feel, is there any sense that that could be the case here?
No, I mean, it's always possible that nothing is found, that he's, you know, that nothing substantial comes out of that also. But the very talk of that server and emails literally, you know, weighed in about 80% of the media reporting on Hillary Clinton during this election, right? As a matter of fact, if you look at the word cloud image of media coverage between Donald Trump and her, hers was one word. And, you know, Donald Trump was four or five different words. Sure, nothing could be found. It's quite possible, you know that we're a fair nation, but more than likely, a lot of things are going to be found. I mean, you don't have to listen to me. Just listen to what's going on there and the people that they're going after. Another thing, Mueller appears to be like a rocket. He's not wasting any time. He's going straight for it, and they say that that's his reputation. And he goes quick. And he goes fast.
And did he? Does his people leak this so that he couldn't be fired? If you think about that for a minute, in other words, Trump he sees them closing in. He says, "Oh, I better fire him now because it'll be too late later." And by leaking this, the FBI or whoever did it really puts a halt to that.
That's a great point. Yeah, because I mean, who leaks and when do they?
Well, most leaks come from Congress. Which is why they're never prosecuted. I mean, these guys talk to each other. Some people are required to be briefed on these activities for oversight. Oh, it wouldn't be.
But did it have to be a leak, though? I mean, couldn't it be that they knew that they were once they realized these people were scheduled for interviews?
Absolutely, you can extrapolate it from the people who have been called in, people who have been, you know, you say that you're going to schedule someone for the Senate Intelligence Committee hearing, and they go, no, I've got to go in and speak to the special counsel. It's like, okay,
what do you think?
Obviously, he's investigating X. And that happens all the time. And so Trump's emphasis on leaks. The Washington Post this morning tweeted a photograph of their talking points to refute the Washington Post story. Right. And the second line was, emphasize that we need to get the leakers. Right? Yeah, well, that's like, what did somebody put an analogy out that said, this is like trying to prosecute firemen after you set fire to a skyscraper. Right? You're mad that someone called 911.
And the White House reportedly leaked the memo that said the problem is leaking.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
The talking point said the problem, you know, the problem is leaking, and it was leaked by someone from the White House, the Washington Post reported.
Steve Bannon.
Can't make that up.
I wonder where that came from.
You said something earlier, though, about this, you know, committing journalism, but between the Times and the Post, especially the Post in this case, it does seem to be, and I think, Alan, you mentioned this yesterday, that all of those threads seem to be coming together. We had a story to the left, a story to the right, a story in the middle, a story, and they all seem to be now weaving together so that we're kind of coming, not yet, but we're coming up with a narrative.
You know, the worst thing that has been said by Trump up to now, in my opinion, and there are a lot of bad things, is that the press are the enemies of the people. Mm. Press are the enemies of the people. Think about that for a second. And Malcolm, you know, I know you have studied societies like Tim Snyder, the professor from Yale, who have gone from democracy to something far worse. And are we on track?
We are. As a matter of fact, I've taken out my little phone for those of you who are listening. And I have this this article, which was written by Roman Saskiw for Small Wars Journal. And it says, the nine lessons of Russian propaganda. And sound, let me know, because we're talking about attacking the press here, if any of these sound familiar. One, rely on dissenting political groups. Two, domestic propaganda is most important. Three, destroy and ridicule the idea of truth. Four, Putin is strong, Russia is strong, right? MAGA, right? So five, headlines are more important than reality, especially while first impressions are forming. Six, demoralize. Seven, move the conversation. Eight, pollute the information space.
Right.
That's military talk for the press world. And I think that that is a critical part of their strategy. I've made this joke on television. I can say it again. I wondered when and where they have set up the office of the Russian Information Warfare Management Advisory Team to the White House, because their strategies are mirror image of the Kremlin's. And I don't know whether it's just by accident or whether there's some, you know, authoritarian playbook that they're passing around, but... You know, this stuff is very scary, and so, attacking the press is a component.
And they believe
we have to go, right?
What?
We have to go?
Well, no, you got a minute or so.
Okay, so are we safer now than when Trump started or not? Do you understand what I'm saying? Are we safer based on all of the ridicule that has come his way and everything that's happening to him? Are we in a better place than, you know, 2 weeks after he took off?
I understand the question, but I...
What?
How many people in this room feel safer? Yeah. Okay, so you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I get the question in the sense that you feel safer because people are sort of onto him, but the stuff is still being done, right?
No, the stuff is still being done, but here's a guy who wanted to do healthcare in 5 days
right.
after he was done. Said it was the best thing ever, now says it's mean. You know, this guy doesn't mind changing on a dime if he thinks it's okay. So I'm just, I happen to think if he doesn't somehow turn this into some kind of dictatorship, we are in a better place now. Now, we're all looking for that excuse to do that. Is it going to be a Reichstag fire? Is it going to be North Korea? And Malcolm, I leave that to you.
I think right now we're in a better place. Now, it doesn't seem that way, but there's a few factors that I think that most people will recognize. One, the media, the press, is on fire. They are out there committing journalism every day. And I hadn't seen that in a very long time.
They're enemies of the people, but don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, you're aiding and abetting the enemy.
Yeah, we'll give you. So there's that. Two, we now, Donald Trump is coming up against the brilliance of the framers of the Constitution. I was born and raised in Philadelphia, right? I grew up around Independence Hall. I know at some point James Madison and Thomas Jefferson were drinking, and they were like, you know what? What if some super crazy rich guy comes in and wants to use the government to enrich himself and, you know, and take over and essentially become king? And he goes, oh, no, separate but equal branches of government, judiciary, investigate, blah, blah, blah. And they probably systems tested it over beers.
And no, seriously, his hair looks sillier than our powdered wigs.
Yes. Never happened.
We have to take a break. Thank you, by the way, Malcolm. You reminded me I have to renew my subscription to Small Wars Journal.
Yeah.
Did you know that existed? We'll take a break. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Teresa Bourgeois, and the man of the hour, Malcolm Nance. We have a live audience at the Linden, downtown Albany on WAMC. We will return and talk more about the issues of the day after this. We are live at the Linda in downtown Albany before a live studio audience. It is Malcolm Nance Day here at the Roundtable, and Malcolm Nance, counterterrorism expert, best-selling author, and commentator for MSNBC, is with us. Joining us on the panel, of course, WAMC's Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Teresa Bourgeois. I'm your host, Joe Donahue, and we welcome you back to the program. We've been talking about the investigation, Bob Mueller's investigation into a possible obstruction of justice. I know you had a question, Teresa.
Yeah, we were talking about the impact on the media, of the attack on the media, but what about the impact on the attack on the institution of the special counsel and generally of our intelligence agencies? Because that's clearly been the focus of the Trump team, you know, as he did during the campaign, attack everybody who disagrees with him, but there's this wholesale attack. So what does that mean both for the investigation itself, but also for these institutions and how they operate?
Well, I know in the intelligence community, for one, you know, it's funny because a couple of weeks ago I was at Marist College and I was listening, because I didn't have a video feed, I was listening to James Brenner, the former director of the CIA, give his testimony. And it was quite amusing because I was shouting at the two poor people in the room who weren't listening to the audio feed. And I was like, oh my God, Brenner's gonna come out as the hero. He's gonna have to have Brad Pitt play him in a movie. Because he was not only standing up for the CIA and standing up for the intelligence community, but it appeared that he was going to tell the truth. And that, as he said, he stood for the institutions that uphold the government. You know, what some people horribly call deep state is actually called the bureaucracy, right? George Washington invented this, guys. So if you hate that, you hate how this nation was run for the last 240 years. But those institutions, I think, will always exist. They go to work. They do jobs thanklessly, day in and day out. With regards to the special prosecutor, I think that's going to take care of itself. If we get to the point where Trump decides, you know, in a moment of madness, that he wants to get rid of the special prosecutor, well, you know, it's like a hydra. You cut its head off, two more will rise. But stronger than the ones before. There's no derailing this through evil machinations or propaganda.
Well, you know, we had a special prosecutor law in this country. And both Democrats and Republicans couldn't wait to get rid of it and to let it expire for obvious reasons. So now we have this sort of thing, right, whatever, hybrid, whatever you want to call it, but he still has the ultimate power to fire, and he probably will, based on what we've seen.
Do you think his attack on the media is working? You get around the country a lot. I mean, he's more or less holding his base. He's laid the carpet so that however he leaves office, either not by choice or by not being reelected, he can use the media as the reason why. Is it a tactic that makes sense to you from his standpoint?
Well, it's a tactic that makes sense to him. I mean, he's done it his whole career. But, you know, it's an interesting question. Is it working? On one hand, it's not. We see right now he's at his disapproval rating of 60%. But it's like I said on that list that I read you, right? Re-engineer or reimagine the information battle space to your advantage. Right. I meet guys from time to time, and here's what I hear these guys say when I talk about, oh, I work with MSNBC or I have pundited on other channels. And they go, oh, you mean the fake media? And they say it jokingly, but I know they're serious. Right. And I go, the fake media. So if there's a tornado coming at your house, and you lived in Schenectady, right? You have a tornado alley here. You're not going to believe that, right? And it's insane. People have now, they've decided that they can pick and choose what truth is. And that's what his attack on the media is bringing about. They're an alternate reality that's dangerous.
Well, as you point out, the Washington Post and the New York Times and others are doing unbelievable work. So if part of his strategy was to make them roll into a ball and disappear, that's failing.
Yeah, but there's a whole group of people who don't believe what their Washington Post, New York Times are writing. That's the danger.
So that's
why I wonder about this denigration of Mueller and the people they're putting around him, because there will be a whole group of people in the country who don't believe what they're doing is true. They'll think it's biased.
So that's what it's all about, right, Malcolm? It's all about the base.
Right. Hardcore 25%?
It's all about the base. When the base disappears or when it gets lower, and there's been some interesting studies here, one of which is, the people are sticking with them. That original base is sticking with them. Mm-hmm. But the level of their, and they measure this, but the level of their appreciation for what Trump is saying is going down. Mm-hmm. So Malcolm and I, I'll tell a secret. During the break, you were saying, what's the number? Everybody wants to know what the number is at the point at which the Republican congressman will run like hell from Trump and say, we're going to impeach this guy because he is now endangering us. And if we don't do something, people in our district aren't going to vote for us.
23.
You think it's 23? I mean, Adam Schiff seemed to say that it was that the straw would be if he fired Mueller.
Say again?
Adam Schiff was saying that the straw and the thing that would get Republicans to turn would be if he fired Mueller.
Well, Mike, we have seen the first crack yesterday when the Senate voted 97-2
on the Russian
Russian interference.
Yeah, to strengthen the Russian sanctions.
Right. Who were the two?
Rand Paul.
Rand Paul and Mike Lee. Yeah.
Are they married? I mean,
they wouldn't tell anybody if they were.
It's Utah.
Oh, then they probably have more than one.
Well, I had heard from a...
Because they moved the power back to the Congress in terms of the sanctions. I think that's... People might...
I heard from a very credible Washington, D.C. source, someone who knew Trump personally and worked the D.C. scene, that the number was 31. That once they get to 31%, there's almost a point of no return. They acknowledge that they can leave Trump's base behind. This was a person who knew the Republicans on Congress, and that pretty much was the number. Now, we're only, 5 points from that? But what's it going to take? I mean, if you watch the CNN program they had the other day of those voters in Ohio, to a man, all of them believe that the Russian thing is a hoax. They believe all the propaganda, and the one last woman said, it's the media pretending that this is important. You know, if I, this is back to the intelligence community. If we come and tell you ISIS is going to attack, you'll believe us. If it's Muslim terrorists, they'll believe every word we say. If we say, and the intelligence community has, 17 agencies have said we had a cyber warfare attack against the United States last year, and our electoral process that has been around since the debate of the Constitution in 1783 is now been endangered. They go, nah, that's fake news.
So, Malcolm, one of the things that was most disturbing to me about these series of hearings, Comey and others, is that it reinforced how little attention that this administration is paying to solving or addressing the issue of the Russian interference, because I don't believe it's true. What are the long-term implications of that? Shouldn't there be our government be doing a lot right now to try to brace against that happening in the future?
I would like to just piggyback on that question, because absolutely. I mean, that was what was worrying me last night of this story coming out about obstruction of justice, because, you know, if you say, oh, well, it's the cover-up that'll get you. Okay, well, if that gets them, but still, we still have the fundamental problem about the Russians infiltrating our elections.
Yeah, and, you know, the Russian intelligence agencies are equal opportunity agencies, right? They could just as easily information engineer the 2018 elections to completely throw it to the Democrats. I mean, all of those little bots that come out by the millions and transmitted MAGA messages who had one follower on Twitter, and all of those could be turned around. This is a danger to our democracy. And the biggest problem is the people on Trump's senior staff, starting with Steve Bannon, do not believe fundamentally in liberal democracy. And he has said that. You don't have to believe me. He worships a guy, Alexander Dugin, who believes that autocracies should rule the earth. And Russia now believes they established an autocracy in America. And they just missed out in France, and they're going to try again in Germany, and they took a shot at Austria and the Netherlands. Once that's established, democracy's on its way out. And so that is the fundamental problem. Their methodologies, their attack tactics of using cyber warfare, hybrid warfare, other types of asymmetric political operations, we've been aware of that forever. It's the KGB ran all those operations. They changed their letters to FSB, so now we don't have to listen to
it. And who is the head of that group that is KGB thing?
Vladimir Putin, former director of the KGB. And I literally have had people say to me to my face, they trust Putin over Obama. And only when I word it this way, you trust the former, the director of the KGB, right? James Bond, evil villain KGB, over a president of the United States? What are you, some kind of commie? That's when they back off a little.
This story, we're going to take a break. This story is breaking right now, but the president, no, it's not like one that you'd have to be overly scared about, just a little scared about. Vladimir Putin was doing his yearly live and call-in show and was
Three
asked
hours.
The question,
what's, the president called in?
What's the difference between the, right, now caller number five.
It's the Donald.
What was his name?
Or John Barron.
John Barron.
John Barron.
Yeah, that's it. What's the difference between the FBI director and Mr. Snowden was the question. And he said that he would offer political asylum to FBI director, former FBI director James Comey in the same way that Russia had sheltered former NSA contractor Edward Snowden.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice.
He can be a defector. Awesome.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. It is Malcolm Nance Day on the Round Table. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and our live Roundtable panel from the Linda in downtown Albany. A sold-out crowd here, and we couldn't be more thrilled to have them. They're caffeinated, they're sugared up, and they're ready for... we're going to go to questions right after the top of the news break. We're going to take news at the top of the hour, and then we'll go into the audience and take questions from you. Only taking questions from our studio audience today, not from emails or listeners, but we'll be back to you all tomorrow, I promise. So if you just want to share your thoughts, it's panel at WAMC.org. We just won't be doing them on the air. We'll be going into the audience for questions instead.
And a lot of our regular writers, I want you to know, are here today, so we don't have to worry about that.
That's right. Yeah, instead they came in person, and that's fine. We like that. So let us just kind of wrap up the talk on all of this, and we'll get into some other topics as we wade through questions as well. I know... Teresa, you had a question about regarding Donald Trump's legal team and the lawyer.
Right. No. Yeah. I'm wondering, given that the Donald Trump's personal lawyer, his firm has been involved in representing the Russians as well, and the reports that he's wandering through the White House and such, what are the rules around clearance for somebody like that? Security clearance, he's got to represent him, he's got to be seeing classified information, but how does he get clearance, and what are the conflict issues around his involvement with Russians?
That's a good question. Here's how the clearance process works at the executive level. Normally, when you're in that environment, you have to have a top secret clearance, which covers you for exposure. And that's not normally top secret sensitive compartmented information, which is much higher, right? Because the Secret Service has protocols, all sorts of things that are going on there. This lawyer supposedly wants to move into the White House so that he can have communications, privileged communications with the president. To get that top secret billet, though, that top secret clearance, you have to have a slot within the big security clearance world. The president can just point to you and say, that person needs to be cleared. He's going to get an interim clearance. They're still going to have to go and check his background. If they find anything untoward in that background, they can withhold that clearance. But for now, he's going to get cleared just to be in the White House. Now, I read yesterday that he's going to need a lawyer.
You mean the lawyer?
His lawyer's going to need a lawyer.
The lawyer will need a lawyer because he's his private counsel. and he has his own problems, as you said, links to Russian clients, and those clients and his relationships may fall under the special counsel. So, you know, get out the checkbook and be prepared. And that may force him to move from the White House.
And what about the FBI nominee, Ray, who is you know, he has a good reputation, but the fact that he comes from a law firm that also represents the Russians, are there going to be any issues there?
Well, I don't know specifically about whether, you know, his background with the Russians. The firm may have represented him. The question is, did he personally do that? And I'm sure that when they nominated him, that was one of the things that they didn't want. But, you know, interesting fun fact, friend of Mueller's, friend of Comey's, you know, these guys who were around the FBI were these career professionals and career prosecutors. They all know each other, and they generally don't play games. And so if they thought we're going to put Ray in, you know, and McCabe still is the deputy there, you know, and he's going to derail this thing, that's not going to happen. They're putting in people who are going to ensure the stability of that system. And that is not going to work out well for a particular group of individuals.
The Dow is down today, started, it's 86 points down. NASDAQ is down 71 points. So I assume you're going to see more and more of the, or I don't know. We were talking the other day about how, why didn't we see it after the Comey testimony, right?
Right, about the markets. You know, we talked about the numbers in terms of Trump's support among his constituency, but one of the things that I think will drive that down is if the markets go down, and I'm curious about why the markets have not seemed to be jittery in the midst of all this news, but then I just got alert now that the markets are
down. Well, the
markets
really go down when there seems to be a threat to the Trump presidency that's really serious and thus will take off the table such things as tax reform that's favorable to corporations.
Maybe they figured out Obama's not president.
Well, what took him so long on that? So Alan, when you look at this of where we are right now with this investigation, and you think just a couple of days ago the top stories were that Mueller could possibly be fired, Trump was going on saying that he was vindicated, Jeff Sessions has his hearing and doesn't really say anything. So if you're in the White House, it's harder to spin this in a positive direction, isn't it?
I think Trump is in real, real trouble. And I think there's a very good chance, if, as Malcolm is right, that it gets down to 31, or in my case, anything with a 2 before it, you know, 29, 28, that's when impeachment becomes real. Because that's when those Republicans who have been shills up until now and live in an oligarchy, which the House of Representatives is, in case you haven't noticed that, unlike the Senate, but the House is really one guy. And that's sort of Ryan in the way that it goes. But I think he's in real trouble as that number continues to go down.
But the processes take so long. Let's presume I think you're right about that. I agree with you. But the impeachment process could take 2 years, maybe longer. In the meantime, we've got him and his government doing nothing, spinning its wheels.
Well, that's right.
Well, they're not doing nothing. I mean, that's the problem.
They're doing negative stuff, yeah.
Right. I mean, I think that they're coming, it appears now they're coming very close to passing a health care bill in the Senate that they've crafted in secret. You see a lot of the rules changes around banking laws, the protections for consumers, around climate change, around a whole host of others, if you look at these budget cuts. So the fact is we're all focused on this, which is important, but there's a whole host of changes they're making in how government works.
But don't
dangerous.
You all think that the closer that it comes to the I word, that people who would be involved in the substantive legislation, for example, the health care, will be loath to have their names next to what Trump wants. I mean, I think that is why this is, yeah, you're right. It's going to take a long time, Ira. But I'd rather have that than not have any of it.
But even without the legislation on health care, look at what they're doing to destabilize the health care market. I mean, they've been very successful in just a couple of months in destabilizing
Absolutely.
The health care market. And making tremendous changes in how we do banking business, you know, how we deal with environmental issues.
I always thought the I word was Ira.
That's exactly what I meant.
Knew it.
You know,
well,
if I
Trump
just,
is focused too much on I and not enough on country, I think.
You know, and I think that to a certain extent, to the detriment of a lot of people, some of whom are clapping, we also have been placing too much emphasis on impeachment.
Right.
You know, there's an investigation. That's the I that I'm more interested in.
Right.
Because based on even the preliminaries, this thing has four or five different tiers, multiple people who may have been doing naughtiness, and that needs to be investigated. I believe, and others who I know who have know Trump personally, believe he will never resign, no. Right? Never. You will literally have to pick up his chair and put it into a, you know, into a tractor trailer.
So what would he gain by resigning? I mean, right now he has the, at least he has the protection of the White House and the, you know, I mean, obviously, we still don't know if you can indict a sitting president. Whether you, it's not extraordinary. There is a lot of thinking you may not indict a sitting president, which means if one day Melania really ticks him off, and he, for want of, I mean, I would never say this, but he does a really bad crime.
I would never say like, this.
I would never say this in front of an open microphone.
Like killer.
No, don't say that.
You couldn't indict him?
No, Alan.
Yeah.
What? You couldn't indict him?
Yeah, a president can be held up to all crimes after removal from office.
Yes.
I mean, Bill Clinton proved this. You know, you can go to trial, you can be deposed. As a matter of fact, his depositions or will probably be the first thing that are going to express train their way through our summer.
Let me just be very clear, because I've been called up short by Teresa. I didn't mean he should kill her. I was taking the absurd notion, if you take some, you take it to prove the point, that if he did something really terrible, he couldn't be indicted until he was removed from office, at least in some legal theories, right?
I think he can be indicted, he just can't be prosecuted for a crime or sent to jail. Oh, I'm sure some legal scholar is going to text that in really soon.
Oh, well, there's been a lot.
Don't listen to Lawrence Tribe. Well, no, actually, listen to Lawrence Tribe. It's a,
so what's the name of your book again?
Oh, Plot to Hack America. How Putin cyber spies and WikiLeaks tried to steal the 2016 election.
Try? Oh, you have the book in your hand. That's very nice. Try?
That book came out last September 23rd. And I still haven't hit the New York Times bestsellers list. Somebody get on that.
What's
you haven't bought
that?
One for your ma yet. Now's the time. Father's Day's coming.
Nothing says I love you quite like how the election got stolen, Dad. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go out in the audience, and we're going to get questions from them, from Malcolm Nance, and from our wonderful panel. We thank all of you for being with us. Stay tuned. We'll be back after news. Welcome back to the Roundtable, live from the Linda in downtown Albany. It's WAMC's Roundtable panel before a live studio audience. And I just want to say, they're a pretty group. Ira Fussfeld is here. Teresa Bourgeois is here. Dr. Alan Shartok is here. And the man of the hour, counterterrorism expert, Malcolm Nance. We've been spending a lot of time this morning talking about the investigation and Bob Mueller's possible investigation into obstruction of justice. We've also been talking about the Russia connection. I want to spend the next 20 minutes or so with audience questions. I know our audience has a lot of questions, and we're taking questions just from the people in this room today. So if you're out there listening, just yell it at your radio, and I'm sure we'll pick it up. Anyway, let's begin. Question number one. Yes, sir.
Hi. Rex Tillerson is closer to Putin than anybody. You know, he got a friendship award, and now he's in trouble with Exxon, with an investigation by the New York State Attorney General. How does he stay under the radar?
Rex Tillerson.
Well, he doesn't bring the press with him. I mean, it's just that simple. He just does not bring the press. Also, he has virtually no staff.
Right.
The State Department was gutted There were over, I can't recall how many hundreds of people are still missing from the administration. I think the number's 400, and over 400 positions. There are no assistant secretaries of state, deputy secretaries of state. Most U.S. ambassadorships are empty. Everything goes through Twitter now. And Rex Tillerson doesn't do Twitter, so you never hear from him.
Senate Democrats put out a chart yesterday showing the top leadership and how many of the key slots are vacant in the State Department. It's really shocking.
It is.
And that's why we love Teresa so much, because she's the only one in the room who knew that.
But look at this, you know, just look at this chart, and it's really frightening, because there is, I mean, you can speak to this better than anyone, Malcolm, about, you know, in all the business that's going on all around the world and all of the work that these folks do and how important it is. I mean, even the Defense Department is worried about these vacancies, right?
But what does Trump do? He blames the Democrats for being obstructionists when he hasn't nominated them.
He hasn't nominated them.
Well, because he doesn't want to. I mean, Tillerson is technically a business manager. I mean, this guy came from Exxon to cut a deal for Exxon. And now, because Trump speaks directly, Jared Kushner is his liaison officer, there is no need for diplomats because they don't believe in diplomacy. And if they want, you know, if you want to get in contact with the United States, well, you know, some have alleged that you have to get a room at the Trump Hotel in Washington. And that's not a joke. That's also being investigated. So, you know, unfortunately, the normal structures that, you know, I mean, Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin were our first two diplomats. You know, so much for them and their legacy.
Or the other way you could do it is get in touch with an oligarch in Russia.
Oh, yeah, you meet him at Mar-a-Lago.
Next question, sir.
Alan Chartok is my hero, so I'm going to pull an Alan and go to the extreme. Let's say Trump leaves, Mike Pence is our new president.
Oh, no.
Is that an improvement?
Oh, are you asking me? It's not good.
But how is Vice President Pence not complicit in all of this?
You know, I believe Mike Pence has really been operating under the radar, but we already learned that the entire story of Michael Flynn's firing may be a myth. That he was noted, I believe Elijah Cummings sent Mike Pence and the transition team a letter. They claim that letter was never delivered. Then they produced the letter and his delivery stamp. I mean, these guys are all going, they have to understand, investigations don't just skim over the top and take what you say at face value. They will get to the bottom of it.
He chaired the transition team. Mike Pence chaired the transition team.
Well, but to answer the question as best I can, even though I may tick you off, it will be a much more Bushian type of government than it is a Trumpian type of, you know, just making a lot of noise.
Less tweeting?
No tweeting.
I mean, the differences then would be policy differences. It wouldn't be the threats to the structures of our democracy. I agree with you then.
It's exactly
on that,
right. It's exactly right.
We would be discussing policy.
But a Pence administration would be so fundamentally damaged that, and hopefully an energized base might do something about Congress. But they will be so functionally damaged that they will have to embrace all of the past norms that have been thrown out the window since the election.
We've been getting a ton of mail saying everybody knows that the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate know. Read the 25th Amendment, everybody. What happens is that's the way we got Nelson Rockefeller as the Vice President of the United States. Pence moves up. He nominates somebody who would be confirmable by the Senate. And that's what would happen. And I bet he will appoint somebody who is a lot more amenable to the American people than what we have now.
All right. A lot of hands up. Try to get to as many questions as we possibly can. Yes.
Good morning, panel. I would like to know what governing body has authority over funding Mueller's investigation. And this question is coming from one of the spins was that the reason why Comey was fired because he was looking for, he requested additional resources.
Teresa, do you know the answer to that?
I don't know the answer to who. I mean, I know that it gets funded through the FBI, and I know the FBI has to get its funding from the OMB and ultimately the president. But can the Congress appropriate additional funds if they so choose? I think the answer is yes, but I'd have to research that. I think that the Congress could appropriate above what the president's ask is, but I would have to check that. Do you know, Malcolm?
No, I don't. I thought it was a Justice Department, but someone will do some Google foo here very quickly.
It's definitely a Justice Department budget item.
Right.
And that the Justice Department gets its budget approved through the Office of Management and Budget, which ultimately through the president. The Congress Appropriations Committees approve those budgets. That's what their budget hearings were in the last week that we, you know, Tillerson and others, and the Justice Department had its budget review before Congress this past week. But if they try to shortchange them, if they try to starve it, you know, the committee, I think Congress can step in, but I'm not 100% sure.
Next question.
There's a man who's sort of a hero here in Albany named Preet Bharara. How does his firing, which came before Comey's, figure in all this? And what was he looking at?
What was he looking at?
Well, there have been reports in the paper about friends of Trump, FOTs, who were under investigation. And I'm trying with my feeble brain to remember the name of the person.
He was investigating Congressman Collins and the Secretary of Health and Human... He was reportedly investigating the Secretary of Health and Human Services when he was a congressman, Congressman Price.
Yeah.
There's some issues about his dealings with... investing in stocks in healthcare at the same time he was regulating those or acting on those companies.
And he was also investigating Fox News, which is Murdoch.
And he's investigating Murdoch. And then the question was he also investigating? He certainly had the authority to investigate Trump family dealings, perhaps around the charities issue and other things.
What I want to know is if he had answered the phone, whether he'd still be there.
Well, I also, this ProPublica report that says that Trump's lawyer was the one that urged him to fire Preet Bharara.
Yes, I saw that.
We are going to go back to questions. Just one quick thing. I just want to note here in the audience for the people in this room and people listening, not only do we have a terrific panel up on stage, but we have panel members here in our audience. Barbara Smith is here, author and activist. Harriet Tubman Award winner Barbara Smith is here.
Yeah, just got a big award, Barbara Smith.
Big award last weekend. And the one, the only political consultant, Libby Post, is here.
Oh, Libby.
We didn't put him to work today, but we will, don't worry. At the risk of this being sounding like a Trump cabinet meeting, let me just say that...
How much we love you, Joe.
Well, I'm just blessed to work with such a great panel. Seriously, ladies and gentlemen, you look around at the people that we have that come in every day to do this program and the knowledge and the breadth of their knowledge that they share with us every day. It's pretty damn incredible. So a big hand for all of the panelists that come up. Yes, sir. Your question.
My biggest fear is that at the root of effective democracy and rule of law is truth. And if truth is obliterated, it seems to me like we've got a real serious issue. We know that Donald Trump himself thinks that he's his best spokesman, and that's why he's out tweeting all the time. And the alternate world that's out there markets us as producing the fake news, when in fact we're trying to get to the truth. So how do we combat it effectively? They combat us effectively by spreading that we are the fake news. How do we get our voice out there? The truth alone doesn't seem to be doing it. We need to do something else to get back to where truth is honored.
I think that the media has done a good job of recalibrating this story. Now every time I see somebody out there go fake news, I already know it's a fake news site saying it. Donald Trump uses that phrase incessantly to the point where it's almost nullified itself. If it's not, I tell everyone this every day because there are a bunch of, I'm sorry, there's some left-wing fake news sites out there and individuals on Twitter, and they know who I'm talking about, who pretend that they're the left and or pretend that they're progressive or anti-Trump, who do such crazy things, you all look stupid. And they put out fake news. You have to go to a credible news source. Washington Post, credible. New York Times, credible. BBC, incredible. Newsbusters? Not so good.
InfoWars, Breitbart?
InfoWars, Breitbart, bad. You know, I mean, they're not news. They are propaganda outfits. Remember, they want to manage the information battle space and alter your reality.
In case you haven't heard, Fox News is no longer calling itself fair and balanced.
Yes, that is wow.
A moment of honesty.
My God, they got to change the coffee mugs.
But this is getting at the truth and having some common facts, I think, is a fundamental issue here that we need to resolve as a country.
Good morning. I'm heartened by the crowd here and also by the esteemed panel and the wisdom and experience of the guest speaker, Mr. Nance. But I'm concerned that all of the comments or the reflections are based on logic. And
how dare we?
It doesn't seem that that's what's been happening in the rest of the country. Some initial concerns, I'm wondering, do the Russians have dossiers on all of the higher-ups in Congress or the people who are making the decisions? How much are they being affected? Ultimately, as we're all being distracted by this, Trump has incredible impact potential on the judiciary. He has 108 seats waiting to be nominated, and he just did 12, right. Three of whom are abhorrent. And then the other ultimate and then there's the gerrymandering issue, which there's a think tank in Washington who states that even if all things go well for the Democrats, there's only one potential for one seat to be switched. Finally, my ultimate concern about Trump is for the average person, any one of us in the room, ignorance of the law has never been a defense. But Speaker Ryan came out the other day saying, well, Trump is, you know, he's new to this. He doesn't really know. And that's what got Trump elected, that he was an outsider. And I'm concerned that his ability to claim that he was just an outsider, poor me, I'm not a politician, so let me get off the hook. And I'm concerned that that would end up being the thing that gets him away.
Let me address that point right now, because I've spent the last week being asked that question on multiple media platforms. Okay, the moment he raised his hand and took the oath, he came under control of 6,000 atomic weapons. There is no, I didn't know, I'm a newbie thing, right? That excuse is inoperative, and everyone should hold their elected officials to account for that. Okay, that was the scary part of the show, right?
God. Well, that was the scary part, but also the fact that Paul Ryan would say that. I mean, at what point does...
It was irresponsible. Malfeasance is the word. It's malfeasance.
Is there a spine there?
No.
Oh, thank you for answering. I appreciate that. Thank you.
But the thing is, there's evidence out there that he did know, because during the campaign, he repeatedly went after the Secretary Clinton because her husband talked to the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, on the tarmac. And so for months, he railed against that. So if he understood it as it relates to Secretary Clinton, he certainly understood it as it relates to himself. And for Paul Ryan, malfeasance.
Thank you for your time. Is there any constitutional precedent for if Trump gets impeached, indicted, what about all his appointees? Aren't they all then? Is there?
No.
They just move.
No,
into,
no, they stay. Stay until another president replaces them.
Yeah, it's not removal of government. It's removal of the president from office.
Unless they quit, right?
Right. Well, I mean, they may be so, as Alan said earlier, so tarnished. I mean, if this thing, I'm from the intelligence community side. I have a vested interest in seeing the spy hunt play itself out. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. If it turns out to be a fraction true, all right, then we're in Benedict Arnold territory. This is the sort of thing you don't want to be anywhere near. And that's why we said a little earlier that if Mike Pence becomes president, he's going to be a very chaste president.
All right. We have 3 minutes, and I think we can get 2 questions in that time.
Lightning round.
Yes. As I watched Jeff Sessions have his major meltdown because an intelligent black woman dared to ask him a question he didn't want to answer... when does he get called in by Mueller?
When does he get called in by?
What if he gets called in by Mueller?
When? I think there's going to be a conga line going in and out of Mueller's office. I think it started already. Jay Johnson, I understand, is supposed to speak before the Senate Intelligence Committee. But, you know, when Mueller starts calling people in, you know, this is going to be the Grand Inquisition.
Right. And you don't lie to an FBI
agent. Never.
You lie. If the FBI agent comes to your office and asks you a question, go,
If he said,
don't lie. If you lie, it's a crime.
If you, he says good morning and you say good morning and it's raining outside, felony. No, you have lied to a federal officer. That's their only true power, is that never lie to him, have your lawyer lie for you.
All right, minute left.
That's not legal advice.
Okay, quick, big question. A lot of journalists like Gasha Monk have been talking about what damage has Trump done to this country in terms of going forward. I mean, if we have a smarter guy or woman who runs and has a lot of the same authoritarian ideas but is a lot smarter about it, has he opened the door to something? And that, I mean, it seems to be a very scary question and time for that. So
that question was asked by Daisy, by the way, who writes to the panel every day with remarkably good taste.
Daisy Foote.
Yes. Who wants to answer the question?
Well, as I said before, I just think he has laid the groundwork regarding fake news and piled that on top of the divisiveness in general in this country. There's a lot of work that needs to be done to sort of reorder us back to where we're supposed to be. But I think if another person does what Trump is doing, but only smarter, it will be effective because the groundwork has already been laid for that.
And
that's why, to the other fellow's question, what we've discussed this a lot on the Media Project and saying, well, what can we do? Everybody's complaining about fake news in the media. And our answer has been, we just keep doing what we're supposed to do. We just commit good journalism every day. And newspapers like The Times and The Washington Post are showing that it is accurate and effective, and that's what has to happen. And, the hope word is hopefully the country will see it.
I think there is cause to be concerned about the threats to our democracy, but I also think you see the democracy working when the courts block the ban, four different courts now, and when the Senate yesterday votes overwhelmingly for the protection against the Russian sanctions. I think you do see that the democratic process is working.
All right. Another question.
Yes, good morning, panel. My understanding is that Robert Mueller was hired as a special counsel.
Yes.
On the ride over here this morning, my wife and I listened to an interview on the radio that labeled him as a special prosecutor. And I'm wondering if you could clarify the two and explain the difference and what that means as he moves forward in this investigation.
Thank you.
Pretty sure he's special counsel. Really right. Early on, the first day, people confused special prosecutor and special counsel. And I think they have a different set of laws that they were brought up.
Well, there is
no more special prosecutors.
There's no more special prosecutors. Right.
It was more independent. There were a group of people said it selected the special prosecutor, but that law expired, wasn't renewed, so special counsel is what's in place now.
But in good news, the special counsel has unlimited investigatory power. He can use the entirety of the FBI. It's a question, of course, resourcing. And he can investigate just about anything. I believe his remit is that he can investigate any angle plus any other things that he sees relevant, which is how you get to a blue dress or how you get to a server in your skiff in your basement of your house when you're investigating other things. And believe me, he doesn't have far to go. I mean, I think he's going to be overwhelmed. He's going to have to start pick and choosing crimes.
No, it's true.
Well, we are about at the end of our time together. I just want to thank all of you for coming out. We sold out this place in record time, in no small part because of Malcolm Nance, but also because of your love and generosity for this radio station. So give yourselves a big hand, our studio audience here at the Linda. My thanks, of course, to our incredible panel. Dr. Alan Chartok, big hand for Alan and all that he has done for us in this station. Ira Fussfeld and Teresa Bourgeois, thank you very much. To Barbara Smith and to Libby Post, who are in the audience, thank you. And a big hand for the man of the hour, Malcolm Nance, ladies and gentlemen. We will return after this short break.